My older brother and I weren't very close growing up. Even though there were 2 years between us, he was actually held back a year because of a learning disability. I moved ahead by fluke of the month in which I was born. And because of these two separate circumstances, my brother and I ended up in the same grade. You can probably already predict the relationship dynamics just giving this scenario. But it was made worse by the fact that I happened to do well academically, and my brother, burdened with a disability, did not. On the other hand, I was one of those kids who just could not hold on to money. The second I had a dollar in my pocket, I rode my bike down to 7-Eleven and spent it on comic books, candy, or Slurpees. My brother was smarter. He was able to exercise a whole lot more self-control. Each and every penny that he earned, he saved and invested. And in a strange twist of justice, he was always able to bamboozle me, who had no self-control. For instance, occasionally he would have a stash of snacks saved for an entrepreneurial moment, waiting for the balance of supply and demand to tip in his favor. And I can clearly recall a moment of craving when he had a whole bag of Fritos and I had none. But he'd be willing to part with some of his at a market rate of 5 cents per chip. Per chip. Now, at the time, I had no idea what the retail cost per chip was, and I seriously didn't think he did either, but he knew instinctively that he was going to make a profit. In fact, for this homily, I happened to work out the math. He was charging me more than 60 times the market rate. 60! 6-0. Let me put this in perspective. Imagine needing a postage stamp. It's what, 49 cents? Let me ask you this question. Would you take the time to drive or walk some distance to the post office just to spend 49 cents? Or, for convenience sake, would you buy it directly from your scheming older brother for a convenient $29.40? Of course, I had book smarts, but clearly my street smarts needed some work. As St. Paul states in his letter to the Corinthians today, the Holy Spirit gives out many gifts, but they are varied and they are given to everyone. There is only one Holy Spirit, the same God who does the giving. And as such, you receive gifts from the same Spirit as I do, as my brother did, as your brother does. I could see in my childhood that the Spirit gave me many gifts, one that allowed me to excel academically and then ultimately professionally, though I had more work to do to develop these skills. Likewise, as you can tell just by looking at me, perhaps you could say that the Holy Spirit withheld the gift of height. I will never be a basketball center, unless perhaps I was playing on the St. Dominic's kindergarten team. My brother was also given a great deal of gifts, but they are different than my gifts. And by comparative standards, they seemed a little bit inferior when we were growing up. But as I just relayed to you in my story, he obviously had gifts that I lacked. Now, you're probably thinking to yourselves, yeah, I see how Father Corwin received gifts and his brother received gifts. And you can't really help but to immediately think about the gifts that God gave you in comparison to my gifts or to my brother's gifts. Perhaps you see a little bit of me in you or my brother in you or vice versa. But in doing so, are we not comparing
our gifts to see how we made out. Were we in any way shortchanged? As if the Holy Spirit has dealt someone else a better hand. And this type of thought and any subsequent behavior actually has a name. Or rather, it's a sin, and it's called envy. We do it all the time, and sometimes we just can't help it. It starts out when we're very young, wanting the largest or the most number of cookies for ourselves. And we don't always grow out of it as we get older. Do we think, for instance, that our kids are smarter, more athletic, more popular than our neighbors? Do we not compare our jobs, our houses, our possessions, both material and immaterial? St. Thomas Aquinas tells us that envy is a sorrow or a sadness over another's good, because that good is regarded as something withheld or taken away from the envious person's excellence or reputation. And if you look at the Old Testament, you'll find that virtually every conflict had its root in envy. Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, Joseph and his brothers, Saul and David. And it didn't get that much better in the New Testament. The scribes and the chief priests against Jesus, James and John against the rest of the apostles, King Herod against John the Baptist. The list goes on and on. Depending on how you classify the sin or vice of envy, its antidote, its solution, or the way to avoid it revolves around two things. One, kindness, which concerns the good of one's neighbor. And two, gratitude, which concerns the repayment of something that is due. Now let's look at gratitude, the debt. Few of us spend much time thinking about the gifts that God has given us. Even us Catholics, who go through the liturgical year and seasons where we are supposed to meditate on the salvation that Jesus Christ has given us, we often forget about God's generosity to us. Instead, we tend to attribute our successes using a more humanistic view, where we are the cause. I worked hard. I put in the hours. I educated myself. I found my clients. I did the work. I analyzed the situation. I made the money. And therefore, I am responsible for my own success. But these statements beg more questions. Who gave you the intelligence? Who gave you parents that encouraged you? Who perhaps taught your parents to encourage you? Who gave you the environment in which you were able to nurture and hone your skills? Who gave you the opportunity? Who gave you your drive? If we still want to attribute it to our own bootstrapping, consider this. Who put you in a country where you could flourish? Who didn't put you in a much poorer country where the people have just as much drive, just as much intelligence, just as much skill, but simply cannot overcome the economics of their society? There can only be one answer, and that is God. The Holy Spirit, as Paul states, distributes gifts to each person as he wishes. And if each one of us has received gifts, whatever they might be, then we truly need to be grateful for them. Again, gratitude is a kind of debt that is owed. But who owns the debt? Who requires repayment for the gifts? That, of course, would also be God. But God has everything and lacks nothing.
But just because God does not need our repayment doesn't mean that we do not need to give payment anyway for the good of our souls. So what's the payment, and how do we remit it? Well, at a minimum, we should be truly thankful, and we should communicate it through prayer. But even then, lip service carries so little weight. To be really thankful, we need to act. And the way to do that is to use the gifts that God has given us. How do we use these gifts? Our first instinct is to use them for ourselves. And this is useful, but only to an extent. You see, using the gifts for material gain can be rewarding and fun, but it doesn't last, and it certainly doesn't bring us unending joy. In fact, it often has the opposite effect. Acquiring things just makes us want to acquire more things because we start to delude ourselves into thinking that what we have is insufficient, and that is called misery. And this is exacerbated by the sin of envy, where we think that we must be better, do better, have more than our neighbor. It isn't until we hear the voice of the Holy Spirit that we discover that the use of our gifts must be for the greater glory of God. And that is how we beat envy. Using our gifts for our neighbor and not ourselves is the way we repay God. It is one of the ways that we fulfill the gratitude that we owe him. In obedience to him, we end up actually loving him. And that is what Jesus tells us. How many of us have helped out the poor and the needy materially? Many have done so with our giving tree and food boxes during the holiday seasons, or perhaps throughout the year with St. Vincent de Paul. Or how many of us use our time and treasure for the good of the church and its members? We have an army of people that do that. Does this not bring us joy? Don't these actions give you much more lasting peace? Sure, getting the Porsche or the second home in Tahoe is great, and you can have great times with either. But at the end of the day, is having these items better than having the love of your fellow human being? Sometimes these things seem so obvious, but at the same time, difficult. Our natural inclination is self-preservation or self-fulfillment. And yet Jesus shows us the way to true happiness. The Spirit gave us a myriad of gifts. We just need to use them, not for ourselves, but for God and for our neighbor. It's rather amusing that today's gospel reading is the wedding feast of Cana. We see that the Blessed Mother, like so many observant mothers, has noticed that the wedding party has run out of wine. In a culture where hospitality is so important that people would rather go into debt rather than to not provide for their guests, you can imagine how much concern this would have been for the bride and groom. But Mary sees the problem, and more importantly, she knows the solution. She has Jesus use his gifts, even though he protests by saying that his hour has not yet come. If Jesus can be activated into using his gifts for the bride and groom, could not we do the same? We are called to imitate Christ, and if we do so, we will ultimately join him in his heavenly kingdom.